Hello and welcome to a special edition of The Blind Side, going out on the unusual day of Friday. Usually we work till Monday for this one, but this was too good to not put out. My grateful thanks to the man himself for joining us. We're really delighted he could shed some light on exactly what he's got himself into at the moment and potentially have a look forward to another blockbusting weekend at Twickenham. Please welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast, Matt Banahan!
Evening, Sam.
How are you? Well,
I'm all right, yeah, plodding along, just keeping myself as busy as I can on these nights that are going very dark and stop me playing golf in the evening.
Indeed. Well, we might talk about the golf. We might talk about that. I suppose, really, if people don't know, and maybe why would they? But hopefully they do know that your career has, after playing rugby, after hanging up the boots and enjoying yourself out on the pitch, you found would I call it a new love? Is there a new love of coaching that's come your way, Matt Banahan?
Yeah, I always enjoyed coaching when I was playing, but it was like trying to find the right aspect, because there's so many different sort of varieties of coaching you can do. It if it's professional in men's game, academy set up, in the women's game, even if it's in schools, they're, even though some of them are very similar, they're all very different. With being in a professional game and men's game, it's all results driven, and then your sort of heads on the board if it goes well or doesn't go well, as you can see throughout the years. But I found myself in the women's game, seeing the growth of it at the moment, especially with the World Cup in England, which is massive for the game. And it's quite nice because it's quite refreshing. I call it sometimes the rawest form of rugby. Obviously, you've got teams like England and France and Canada who are three of the strongest by far compared to everybody else. But they're trying to get the level of the playing fields of getting girls playing rugby in Scotland at the age of 10, like the England girls do, not the coming into university and maybe pick up the rugby ball for the first time. So that 6-7 years of them missing out on core skills is valuable, but it's doing the best what we can. And over the last, I'm trying to think how many months I've been there now, sort of 14-15 months, we went from 12th in the world and the highest we got to was 5th. So Scotland rugby's on the rise, and we're getting a group of players, because it's, people want to call it women's rugby, but I still call them rugby players, because they wouldn't, if they're writing down on a piece of paper what they do, they're professional as a rugby player. It doesn't matter if they're male, female, underage, and they're rugby players. Just sort of trying to help them along their journey of being a player, like taking the best bits I had from so many coaches I had and giving what I got given to them.
Yeah, 100%. And can I congratulate you and Scotland on what you have done over the last few months and years? You mentioned it there. I mean, yes, a lot of headlines will go England's way, their unbeaten run at the moment, and all of that. But what do you see as the major thing that has happened for Scotland in your tenure? What has really driven that sort of change?
I think, like, you give plaudits to England that they started the professional game and era a lot earlier than the other nation, so everybody's sort of on catch up to them. But for the Scottish players, I think the ability for them to come down to the English clubs and play, but for them to be sponges, they are desperate to learn, they're desperate to get better. To have that mentality of always trying to be better than what they were the week before, the tournament before, the game before, is what pushes them as a group. And hopefully I've added to that, and as well as other coaches. But the culture that they create up in Scotland, having a smaller pool of players, is nothing I've ever seen before. They pretty much go to war for each other in every session. It's really refreshing. It goes back to probably when I turned professional at Bath, and I think we had a squad of 34. And you knew that if the team needed you to play out of position, you played out of position because that's what the team needed. They're not like the Prem teams now. They have 60, 70 squads and an academy of 20 plus. And you can just, if somebody gets injured, you just bring somebody else in. These players just do what they can for each other. And if you say, can you do this because it will help the team, they do it. And it's phenomenal, the attitude, the behaviour that they do. And it's, I said, I say to myself that I don't ever want any player to talk about me in the press. It's their journey. It's their life. I enjoyed mine, but I just want to guide them and help them to become the best person they can be. And they deserve all applaudits. Like winning in, I think it was winning in Wales for the first time since 2004, winning the first silverware for anybody at Scottish Rugby since 2001. So it's 20 odd years, that age group male or anything. So they did really, that some of the stuff they broke, that's their legacy. It's not mine, it's theirs. It's just amazing to see how far they've pushed themselves and they're still willing to push themselves to achieve more.
Baz, I was racking my brains trying to think of coaches who've previously played on the wing, and I couldn't think of any. Is that a challenge going from playing on the wing to coaching? Is there anything in the kind of the position that you play as a player and how you coach?
I think the irony of this, that the background of, I turned professional as a back row, and then I did a year under Toby Booth as a back row, second row at London Irish. So having Toby's one of the best coaches I've ever seen with detail, knowledge. And so for me to learn stuff from him over that year is so ingrained into me of understanding movement patterns, what team needs as a back rower. And then when I moved to Bath, obviously I came as a winger. And then I played as a winger, as a 12, as a 13, as a 15. So the only position, and I played 10 in a second team game, so I have an understanding. So the only positions I haven't played are front row and nine. So even though that my bio, whatever we'll say, I'm a winger, the ability that I had over my career was to play multiple positions, because what Toby had put into me and ingrained to me at London Irish back in the day was I had to learn all these positions, because by me learning all these positions, it helped me with my movement pattern. And I was obviously, when I moved into the backs, I'm bigger, I'm a bit more lumbrous than everybody else, I'm not as agile. But if I know what they're trying to do, that can help me benefit in my game. So then that falls into a team attack strategy now, is when I speak to the back rows or the second rows, I sort of have a gist of being there, seeing they've done it. And that goes through all the backs as well. And it's that, and then it goes into how you've learned off other coaches you've had of what you think's benefited team with certain styles. I didn't like playing in that because it made me feel vulnerable. Or I like that because I knew I was safe. And then giving them a license to say, well, if you see something, go it. And if you want to do it, I've got to make sure as a backs and attack coach that I've got them enough skills and attributes. I've worked on them that if they fancy to do an offload or chip and chase, that we practiced it so they don't have any fear. But as a winger, I probably, like I said, if I'm the only winger to coach, I'll take that. But I think my broad horizon of the positions I've played hopefully cover me a little bit better than just a wing.
We had Rocky Clark on last week's show doing an absolutely brilliant job of painting the picture of the lead up to next year and the Rugby World Cup. I think it is a difficult question in a sense because we're not quite there yet. But what do you have aspirations from a Scotland point of view? Where are your aspirations as regards next year? What would you really see as an excellent performance in Scotland? Obviously, winning it, absolutely. But aside from that, anything else?
Like I said, the World Cup is the goal for every team. But I think we've still got Six Nations to get through, and I think for us as a Scotland nation, I think we still think it's a good team or a good time for us to grow the depth as well. That at a World Cup, as you can see with every nation now, you can't play the same team in every game over and over again. You need to make sure your second and your thirds in certain positions are to the standard of being able to perform at international level. And obviously, we want to do as well as we can at the World Cup. We've got quite a tough pool with Wales, Fiji and Canada. If you get through that in second place, you're probably rocking up against England in the quarterfinal. So you know that you've got a tough path, and that's the path you've got to play. If you want to be the best, you've got to play the best. And obviously you can see the path. If we want to qualify, we probably don't go into England. So that's the goal, is to try and get into those areas. But before that, we've got to make sure that we can create a platform for more players to come through possibly, or players to express themselves a bit more and go, actually, no, she's our number one now. But it's for us as coaches to create that dynamic and that opportunity for them over the next five games in Six Nations.
I have a casual bet with Jess Hayden, who's a great writer on Women's Rugby, that I think Scotland will come second in the Six Nations next year. There feels like a massive confidence is surging through the team at the moment. WXV2 finished second there just to Australia. And it looks like a definitely pull to get through next year. Is there the sense of that in the camp?
Oh, yeah. I think everything's so new. It's so fresh. It's not any scar tissue. Everything that they are achieving is the unknown. So it's about taking it on board and learning, even though we just got pipped off against Australia in the last game, don't we, which was winner takes all. We were 21-0 down after 20 minutes. And then after 55 minutes, we were 22-21 up. And then in the game, we had a red card and a yellow card, which was massive to the game. But to have the ability to any team, majority of the time, if you're 21-0 down after 20 minutes, most teams will capitulate and crumble away and find it hard. That they had the desire and the resolve to get back into the game and show what they're about, to then lead by 1 point after 60 minutes. A team that can achieve that can actually achieve greater things. We just need to learn from it. And a lot of times you can learn from stuff going well, and it's like the easiest time to learn is when something goes bad. As long as you don't create it as a negative and you use it as a positive, I think that when was in a position that we'd, Scotland, speaking to the other coaches, go 21-0 down and be able to get back in the lead after that. And that belief is what you need to go on. Go and stick to how we play, our structures, everything else we can't control, and we can push whoever we can to the limits and probably, like you said, hopefully achieve some great things over the next, 10 months.
Yeah, it's a really good sporting story, and one I think that if our listeners, you know, weren't aware of, then perhaps, you know, over the next few months and leading into that World Cup, they can just follow Scotland's fortunes. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned resilience there. That's a nice segue into potentially someone who you and I, Matt, know very well, and he embodies the word resilience. You're taking to the field again for our friend Ed Slater in this brilliant 7-4-5 game. Talk to us about your feeling sharing the field with some of the biggest men who've ever touched an oval ball. There are going to be some giants out there, aren't there?
Yeah, I'd probably say that I'm going to be the heaviest at the moment, but I'm all right at the moment. I've done when I signed up to it, when Ed asked me, I have actually been training for the last 10 weeks. And I've gone quite hard on myself, but the problem is I've started putting some big old muscle size back on because I don't do as much running as I used to. So, but these things are, I think it takes it back to like just the soul of why we started. We play rugby because we wanted to play with our mates and we wanted to play with our friends. And I always said, I remember saying when I retired, I'm never going to pull my boots on again. And I thought, yeah, I'm not. And then I pulled my boots on for Billy 12-tree's testimonial game. And I sat in the changing rooms afterwards and I thought, actually, this is what I miss.
Yeah.
Being around with sort of my friends and sort of having a laugh about stuff that went right or wrong. More wrong when you retire because everybody's just so lazy and doesn't work as hard. But I just thought that it's, you see the momentum that the MND's got over the last couple of years with Doddy and Rob. And just some great memories. Even when I went up and played at Headingley when Leeds were in the Prem, I just thought it was a great time to go back up there and pull a boot on with our friends just for the occasion. More than anything, it's if you win, lose, draw, I don't think it really matters. I just hope we get a good crowd up there just to support and raise some money, because I used to love watching league as a kid and watching like Danny Maguire and Keith Senior, Carl Luluai. I think James Buchanan's playing. Like there's some good names playing in the league team. So it's going to be really interesting and just looking forward to going out there, seeing Ed again, seeing the boys and watching some boys struggle really badly. And hopefully the training that I've done is not going to be that bad.
Is there anyone sandbagging at the moment, Bangers, about how much they've done and who you think actually they've been in the gym for months now, they're going to come out firing?
Yeah, Guy Thompson will always come out going really tough, which is good. Garves is coming up for the right reason, but he'll sub himself straight off as soon as he comes back on. Billy 12s will just be fit as a fiddle, as always. But there's this like Tom Youngs, who's gone through his own resilience over the years. Like, Tom, when I first turned professional, I got put in the National Academy, and well, I was just turned 18, so I've known Tom since I was 18. We did England Sevens together, and everybody thought that his life's tough as well, and how he can still crack on, and he's a role model and everything for people, and to see him still rocking out to support Ed, that's what our community is about, and that's why we do it.
Yeah. It's an extraordinary sport in a way that, you know, what survives it all, what pervades it, the whole thing. Whenever you come into contact with these sorts of events, and you know, the sport is lucky. You know, it doesn't go too long before another call to action comes in, and people are brought to, you know, brought, you know, out of retirement into the fold. And as you say there, the love of the sport, the love of each other, it sort of transcends everything, doesn't it? And that's what's really special about our game. And I think, you know, it'll be really, really special occasion, most definitely this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's that point of when I retired, it was, I remember a past player at Bath said to me, I said, how do you know when you retired? He said, when you turn up on a Monday morning, you just didn't have that fire burning to get better. And that, when I remember that the meeting I had with Gloucester, I still had a year left. I said, I've lost my fire. I'll be here for this year, but I'll prepare myself to retire at the end. But the fire to go back out with your mates, when it's not about wage, it's not about performance, it's not about how you play, there's still fire for that. And I think that's what's sort of, I think it's quite hard. Like, the wife says, I've been training for 10 weeks, I've never seen you do that before. I said, because there's more to this. It's like, I don't want to go up there and let Ed down. That's why you train. That's why you want to be better. Like you said, even if it's just to be able to not get cramp, it's as simple as that. But it's to go up there and see our friends and be proud of each other and what we have done and what we still can do together.
Yeah.
The work that they've done is unbelievable. And my partner's mum passed away from MND 2 years ago, and hearing her talk about what that was like the last 3 years of her life is genuinely harrowing, like far worse than kind of anything else, and it is an absolutely kind of evil disease. But she does talk about how inspiring it was and how much she got from, at that point it was mostly Dodgy, but obviously since then Rob and Ed, it's the work they've done, it has been genuinely transformational for families and people who are suffering from MND, and it must be, you know, a really wonderful thing to kind of be a part of that.
Yeah, it's if you want something to change, somebody has to do it. And I think that's where Doddy and Rob have started it, and Ed's carrying it on. I'm sure in the future there'll be something else or someone else, but it would only have started and been carried on by those three. So whilst Ed's still with us, why not keep it going and flying the flag high and mighty? And there's, like I said, it's an opportunity that what they're doing, the three people, what they've done to transform other people's lives, is that's what they're doing it. They're all selfless. They've all got empathy. They've never done it for themselves. They're doing it for people in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And good luck to it all. I do hope you don't get cramp, Banners. How's about that? That's what I hope happens.
I'll just send you a message. Clear.
Yeah. There's another game happening this weekend, and the national papers have been a buzz at the moment with what's going to happen. England play South Africa, having lost against New Zealand, having lost against Australia. Matt Banahan, give us a paragraph on where England are at the moment. What's going on with England at the moment?
I was watching both their last games. I actually think they are so close to being so good, and that's the most frustrating thing. If it's from a decision, an area of the game, substitution, it is one of those games where international rugby, you can win it by 1 point. You don't have to win it by 20, 40, 50. International games just look at W or L's. And at the moment, they've had two L's, probably two decisions made them go from W to L's. If it's from the kickoff, just kicking it long against Australia and saying run out from your 22, or if it's a substitution on 60 minutes against the first game after the Brian
New Zealand
brain fart there, in New Zealand. And are they just going to be those isolated? Probably not, because there's a lot more minutes in the game. But they're the ones that the press have isolated to be such simple things that they can hang their hat on. Marcus Smith, I think, is playing some of the best rugby I've ever seen him. It's the most natural, the most comfortable I've seen him in an international shirt at 10. Would I be moving him? Probably not. Do you see any other international teams change their 10 when they're going well? Probably not. But as a coach, you have something. You have your culture, your reasoning, why, what Borfer sees. And that's how he decides to do it. But I just think they're very, very close to starting something and getting the ball rolling and moving quickly. Because it's not far away. They're only just losing. It's not like years ago where they were getting absolutely hammered every week. Then that's not happening. They're just, it's decisions that are making it, but they're so close to winning. But coming up against the team coming this weekend, you might not have that many decisions to make. You've got to you've got to put your hard hat on and deliver it every time you go into contact. Whereas if you come off the first two, make the right decisions, you go win-win, you're probably thinking, well, this is all right. Actually, we're probably playing the best team in the world, even though I don't think they're ranked number one, being last two World Cups they've won. I don't understand how that works. But they're probably the most informed team.
Mm.
And if you won the first two, you're probably thinking, well, this is probably a 50-50. We're probably going to struggle a bit. But they're probably desperate now because they have to win an autumn international game. There's so much. Produce a different type of game. Maybe that's maybe why they've made a few changes at 9, at 6, at 15, just for the opportunity. Like Freddie Stewart at 15 because they're taking George Furbank off. Is that just because they're expecting high balls, the kicking game? So you're then expecting that, hoping Freddie has a good game under the ball. But it's all decisions. They might not kick the ball. They might think, oh, Freddie Stewart, they were not going to kick the ball now. So yeah, it's always that double guessing it. But I just feel that they're playing so well at the moment, but not getting the results that they probably deserve. But that's international sport.
Yeah.
I've got a question on that, because it feels like this weekend is a kind of a horses for courses selection. As you say, they expect the high ball, they've chosen a team for that. They expect the big ball caddies, they've kind of chosen perhaps Salmon Gill for that job. What is that like from a mentality perspective when you're the player and your coach has picked a team to nullify an opposition's strength rather than maybe to play to your own strength? Is that a difficult situation to be in mentally?
I think there's two ways you take it. You take it as your own ego, because you want to play each week, you want to say it, and then you have to park that to one side and be like, well, I actually respect player A or player B and go, yeah, they are really good under the high ball, so I totally understand that. But inside you're thinking, but I want the opportunity to show that I could have done it, because I don't think George Fairbank's done anything wrong. I think George is good under the high ball. I think Faye Webosa's injured because he got stretched off, so you have to make a change on the wing. They put Slights there and put Roebuck on the bench. For me personally, I probably, just because I think Slights is quite versatile, I'd put Robes to start on the wing because he's big, he's strong. But then are they trying to nullify South Africa's nippy wingers by putting another nippy winger on? So, as you said, is the selection to try and nullify them? With Sam at 6, and they changed at 9. Jack Van Portfleet, Ben Spencer didn't do much wrong in the first two games to not be in the squad at all. But these are the old coach decisions where you live and die by the sword. But there's always heightened pressure, stress just after the first two games. But they're all top quality players, and as you said, how do players take it? They all want to play. They all want to represent their country. They want to play against the best team in the world. How they'll take it, they'll be disappointed. They'll be gutted because a couple of them have been playing quite well. But how you act and how you take the disappointment will always affect your next selection. If you are not the professional and you start saying something, you're probably not going to get selected next time. So if you say, yep, okay, fine, I'll work on that. I'll practice my high balls, I'll practice my kicking, I'll practice my tackling. to make sure I can be more dominant. Next time in this sort of game comes up, they say, I've seen you in the Premiership. You've been doing really well under the high ball, or you're tackled. Or as a player, you can then take that to the coach and go, I've worked on all that stuff. So when that game comes up, I've done. So there's two different ways to take it. Either you take it offensively to your ego, or you try and be proactive and say, okay, I'm going to work on that. What he said to me, I'm going to use that so he can't say that again.
Yeah. Is there any part of you that feels that the results will taint? If South Africa do get their game together, and as is the thinking at the moment, that they will win this weekend. That's three losses from three. That is five games on the bounce that they've lost. Is there any part of you, and I don't really feel this, but is there any part of you that says that that taints Borthwick's record? And are there any questions around what Borthwick is doing at the moment?
I'd probably say no. I think it's been quite hard for Borthwick. He's come in, he's had a lot of senior players just towards the end of their international careers with Faz, yeah, with Joe Marler, even Coley. Marrow's a senior player. They will still have stuff from previous coaches, as you could see all over the press recently. Yeah. Do they carry that? It's hard at international level. You get less time with the players and the areas of skill, culture, all that stuff. You can try and push it as much as you can. But I actually think from the summer tour, Six Nations, I was and Arin. But now I actually think Wiggy, Borthwick are doing a good job. They're pushing it. Joe's come in as defence coach. You've also got to let him bed in. There's all this stuff with Felix. Like, what's he doing with the team still? So there's still a ripple under the water that they need to sort out. But as for players, I think we're playing a better brand of rugby for international, yeah, which is more suiting the style of players we have. Where previous coach, I thought, was stifling, didn't let the players play. Whereas now I actually think we have got a game plan that is benefiting the players we have on the pitch. And we just need to get a momentum going. One game then leads to two games. At the moment, we're losing just two games just by decisions. But if they go win-win, you go, oof, we could beat South Africa now. And that's how tight it is. But I just think that I think they're actually doing a good job. And I've seen a little bit more excitement. Like, I actually will turn on the TV to watch it, because yeah, I'm interested to see people playing at their best, and that's what we want. And even though it's annoying losing against New Zealand and Australia, I was actually quite proud. We yeah, went to them, we chucked the ball around, we didn't play a static game, we moved it, and I think, yeah, I could watch this. And that's sometimes you have to take them on the chin and go, we lost by 1 point, but we could have won by seven.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because it wasn't too long ago that during Eddie Jones's tenure, there was the exact opposite feeling. The people were actually, they were almost winning and people weren't enjoying the way they were playing. Speaking to people down at Twickenham these last couple of weekends, the genuine feeling has been, I'll buy a ticket for that, because we got a chance and we're playing rugby that looks attractive. And so it kind of answers a question that we may have asked ourselves previously, which is, you know, are England fans more interested in winning or playing good rugby? And I think they're in the latter. Sam Lana, what do you reckon to that?
Yeah, I agree. I think there was the feeling of bowling Borthwick at the start of his tenure. That has to have gone, because he seems to have embraced the way that you know, he's got more Saints players in his team and people like how they're playing. He's kind of, he's gone with Don Blanc. There's been some criticism of him lately, but there is those selections which I think are pleasing to people. So it feels, at least from my perspective, as a Welsh fan, at least a slightly objective Welsh fan, that there is a feeling of more confidence that things are going well, even if the results aren't coming. Things are at least heading in the right direction.
And Banners, I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm of things for England actually to turn South Africa over. I go back to 2012 and that way that Lancaster was in a rut and New Zealand turned up as the best team in the world and England turned them over. I mean, this is a funny old game, you know, and England, as you've mentioned there's a lot of puzzle pieces that are in exactly the right position.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what's exciting. I think people still forget sometimes that even though it's performance based, that it's an entertainment. And I think what Sam said earlier about some exciting rugby, and when you're going to exciting rugby, you will get it wrong sometimes. But the day you get it all right and all those puzzle pieces together is the day people go, oh, wow. Like Northampton under Sam and Ralph for years, people are, oh, they're doing all right there. And then they've had 18 months with all the puzzle pieces to come together. And people are like, I actually enjoy watching Northampton. And now we're picking people who are performing in the top four or five teams in the league rather than going, we've got an EPS squad and we'll pick people from out of the league and make all of the positions are... our picks. No, we're now picking people on form. And that was my only bugbear when I played with the EPS squad, is that sometimes we pick people because of what they had done in the past, whereas you want to be picking people who are on form, playing for the best teams, who are being successful, because they're the ones that will raise the level of the international team and push it. And that's what I think they're doing at the moment. And you see what Alex Mitchell has been out injured. Mm. And somebody, people forget how well he was playing and how he is leading teams around the pitch. If it's Northampton or even England, he's just getting the ball rolling in his England jersey, going, oh, he can now do it international level. He's not just a really good Premiership player, he can now do it international. And these are, like I said, puzzle pieces. Is it him coming back in that could be the final? Is it Jack Van Portfleet? Is it Eddie Stewart at the back, a bit more gluey rather than Ferbs, who loves open space? I don't know, but these are opportunities for them to show themselves and express themselves. And like I said, it's so close. And if they would pick the first two games, it'd be win-win. Everybody be buzzing. But I think people are enjoying watching them play, and that's why they're the media are so, I wouldn't say negative, they hang on one or two moments in the game because they're like, they're so good for 79 minutes, but that 1 minute where they made that mistake that made them lose by 1 point because they were so good. And that's what it feels like, is that when that complete path comes on from a game, it will be like that game against New Zealand where people are like, oh, where's this come from? But you can see it trending. You can see it trending, and you want it to come up, and the age of the team, the way they can play together for the next 3 or 4 years, they're going to look dangerous.
Yeah, 100%. Give us one last plug, Banners. Where, if people can still get in a car and come and see you play, where do they get to? Where is it all happening this weekend for you with the 7-4-5 game?
Yeah, 7-4-5 games at Headingley Stadium in Leeds. I think you go on the Leeds Rhinos website and pay tickets. I think it's £20, £25. All goes to the charity. If you want to watch us boys struggle and play around, it's 13 aside. As many tackles as you want in your own half, only 6 over the halfway line. So there'll be a lot of space, a lot of running rugby. Running will deteriorate towards the end of the game. But it should be good fun, not only just to watch the players. I think it's a nice way to give money to charity and come out and have a laugh.
100%. Absolutely. Lots of love to you all. A brilliant, brilliant game, a brilliant cause, and another fine episode of the Rugby Whiteboard, of the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. Thank you very much, Sam Lana. Another good one in the can, eh?
Absolutely. And you should have a look at the squads for Sunday because it is unbelievable.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Matt Banahan. Thank you, Sam Lana. Until next time, this has been the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.